The following recording was produced by the Queechy Church in Queechy, Vermont. For more information on the church, its activities, and resources, please visit us online at www.queechychurch.org.
Well, thank you so much for that wonderful reading, and thank you all for having me with you. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Scott Sodasanti, and I'm a pastoral resident at Christ Redeemer Church, which sort of planted the Queechy Church. And it's a privilege to be with you all this morning as we are digging into God's Word. Would you pray with me as we look at what He has to say to us in this passage? Father in heaven, thank you so much for giving us your Word that calls us to be strong and courageous in the midst of a world that is filled with things that bring us fear and terror. And so, Lord, even now, would you grant this to me, that I might proclaim your word with your power. And Lord, that we might hear what you have to say to us, and that we might go from here grown in the grace that enables us to engage in this world with the strength and courage necessary for your kingdom to go forward. And we ask all these things in Jesus' name. Amen. So this morning we're looking at this passage in Deuteronomy 31, and the title of the sermon here is Walking Courageously with God. Now, if I was to ask you what you think the most important command for God to repeat is, what would you say that it is? If there's one command that God needs to repeat more than any other command, what would that be? Would it be to not lie? Or would it be to not commit sexual immorality? Would it be to not kill or not get angry? Or maybe it's a positive command. Maybe it's to love. Maybe it's the command to believe. Or maybe it's the command to be humble. Interestingly, in the Bible, the command that God repeats more than any other is the command, do not fear. Do not be afraid. Why? Why is this? If the root of all of our sin can be traced back to pride and unbelief. If all of the commandments of God can be summed up as love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your strength, with all your soul, and to love your neighbor as yourself, then why does God repeat, do not be afraid, more than any other command, some 70 times in the Old and New Testaments? Or why in Revelation chapter 21, in the list of those who will be thrown into the lake of fire, why is the first on that list not the lustful, not the liars, not even the murderers and the killers? Why is the first on that list the cowardly? When you tend to think about the greatest problems in the world, the greatest problem in your life, do you think of it as fear? Why is courage, the command to not be afraid, so important to God? Winston Churchill, who's considered by many to be the most famous British Prime Minister of all time because he led Britain through the dark times of World War II when London was being bombed over and over again by Germany. And he led England courageously through that hard time. He said that courage is rightly esteemed the first of all human qualities because it is the quality which guarantees all of the others. C.S. Lewis put it this way, courage is not simply one of the virtues, but it is the form of every virtue at the testing point. What both of these guys are saying is that the command to not be afraid is the most repeated command because you can't obey any of the other commands if you don't obey it. To build on Lewis's language, courage is the vehicle through which every other virtue is expressed. And so, for example, the command to love. If you're going to love someone, it means that you've got to overcome your fear of being hurt and disregarded by them in order to love them. If you're going to obey the command to not lie, that means that you've gotten, and you're afraid that if you let people know what the truth is, it means that you're going to look bad. To obey that command, you've got to overcome your fear of the consequences for the truth coming into the light. You have to have the courage to obey the commandment to not lie. You know, even pride. Pride is just the other side of fear's coin. Pride is the fig leaves that we sow over our fear of being found out for the frauds that we are. Our fear of being seen in our shame. And so often the people who come across as the most proud are often the most radically insecure people. People filled with fear. This summer, all of our churches are going through a series where we look at what does it mean to walk with God? What does it mean to walk with God? And this morning, we're looking at this passage to see what does it mean to walk courageously with God? And there's a dynamic relationship between these two things, between courage, between walking courageously and walking with God. The more that you have courage, the more that you're able to walk with God. And the more that you walk with God, the more that you're able to have courage. This morning, we're going to unpack this dynamic by looking at particularly verse 6 of chapter 31. Be strong and courageous. Do not fear or be in dread of them, for it is the Lord your God who goes with you wherever you go. He will not leave you or forsake you. And in this verse, we see three essential components of walking courageously with God. First, we see the positive command, be strong and courageous. Secondly, we see the negative command, do not fear or be in dread of them. And then finally, we see the power to obey both of these commands. For it is the Lord your God who goes with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. And so, let's look at these three things. First, the positive command, be strong and courageous. What does that mean? What does it mean to be strong and courageous? Why are these things so often linked together? We know that they're linked together, that courage, the willingness to do what's right, is linked together with strength, which is the power to do it, because courage is always expressed in action. It's always expressed in a working out of love in the real world. And so here's what I'd like to suggest to us this morning as a definition of what it means to be strong and courageous. It means to have an active trust in the living God that takes concrete steps of faith in the face of danger, whether that's real or perceived danger, for the cause of love. Let me say that again. To be strong and courageous is to have an active trust in the living God that takes concrete steps of faith in the face of danger, whether that's real or perceived, for the cause of love. And so, let's unpack this. First, what this means is that courage is not something that some people have and some people don't have. It's not true that some people are born with courage and some people are born without courage. You know, look at that guy. He's got every reason to be confident. Look at his circumstances. He's got every reason to be able to move forward with strength, with confidence, but not me. When I look at my life, I have no reason to be strong and courageous. And to this, God says, no, anyone can be strong and courageous. Anyone can take concrete steps of faith that flow from active trust in the living God for the cause of love in the face of real danger. Now notice in this passage who this command is given to, this command to be strong and courageous. You might confuse verse 6 with the command to Joshua in verses 7 and 8, a command that's famously repeated in Joshua chapter 1. This is a hugely important command. It is repeated again and again in these books. But here, who is the command given to? Look at verse 1. Who did Moses speak these words to? All Israel. All of Israel. The Hebrew grammar for be strong and courageous is second person plural imperative. It is a command not just to Joshua, but to all of the people, men, women, and children. Everyone is called to be strong and courageous. Because even though this command is specifically repeated to Joshua, because he's going to need a special kind of strength and courage to lead these people, and even though it's going to be men who are going to actually be the ones who are fighting the battle, every single person in that community needs strength and courage to live out obedience to God's command. In the Old Testament, the prototypical courage story is not a story from the life of Samson, a judge who God endowed with supernatural strength. The prototypical story is the story of a small boy, a weak person who stands up to a strong person, who stands up to a giant. You see, the more innately weak that you are, the more opportunity you have to display real courage and strength. In J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings, he intentionally makes the heroes of the stories hobbits, small, weak creatures who love their creature comforts. And he does this to show us that real courage isn't based on our external power. It's not something that some of us have and some of us don't. When the hobbit Frodo is talking to the wizard Gandalf about the crisis of finding this ring, which set him on this dangerous quest, he says to him, "I wish it need not have happened in my time." And Gandalf replies, "So do I, and so do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given us." You see, courage is not about your power. Courage is not about your strength. It's not about your circumstances. Courage is about walking faithfully down the path that the Lord of heaven and earth has set before you. In the time that he has set before you, whatever goblins and dragons may appear on that path, courage is walking with God. As the hymn puts it, through many dangers, toils, and snares. Because courage knows that grace has brought me safe thus far, and grace is going to lead me home. Now, the second thing that this definition of courage that we're working with means, you see at the end of it, I said that courage, it's active in the cause of love. Now, why did I say that? It's because courage is not just what we tend to think of it as. It's not just taking calculated risks to benefit yourself. You know, if you look up courage in a self-help book or on the internet, you'll find a ton of similar categories to what we're looking at this morning, to true courage. You know, you'll hear that you got to take risks to be courageous. You got to make yourself vulnerable, open to attack. And that's all true. But typically, that's where those books will stop. They're focused on the vehicle of courage, but they're not really concerned with where that courage is going to take you, what the destination is. But real courage, the courage God's commanding in this passage, cares about where it's taking you. He gives this command in the context of saying, obey my commandments. Take the promised land. You have to drive out these evildoers. And so courage, it always fleshes itself out in obedience to God's commandments, which again are summarized in the command to love God with all you are and to love your neighbor as yourself. And so courage expresses itself in the cause of love. So biblical courage is not less than opening yourself up. It's not less to being vulnerable, but it's more than that. It's not just taking a calculated risk to get ahead. It's not just leaving a stable job because you think you can make it big in a different venture. Being courageous is not just being a daredevil who's trying to prove himself, who's risking his life to prove himself. Real courage needs an object other than itself. You know, it's striking to me that as the most individualistic culture in history, and as a culture that's increasingly becoming more and more individualistic, that's increasingly focusing more and more on defining ourselves, on making a name for ourselves, on pursuing our own comfort, pursuing our own success, pursuing our own felt needs, that we're also increasingly becoming a more and more cowardly and weak kind of culture. You know, increasingly people are dropping out of hard work. I work part-time at the hospital, and we've got a huge shortage of nurses here and across the country because the work is too hard. People want flexible schedules. No one wants to sign up for the long hours, the physically and emotionally demanding and exhausting work of caring for real people who are messy and sick. Back in January, we went to a church leaders conference, and they said that by the end of this pandemic, as many as a third of people in ministry will have left. There was a recent study that said in the past year, nearly 40% of pastors have considered leaving the full-time ministry. Why is this? It's because we have bought the lie that every single one of us has been infected by this to varying degrees. The lie that our life is about ultimately about us, that we can live life and we should pursue life that doesn't need strength and courage. We don't want life that requires us to walk into the overwhelm. We don't want to walk into the overwhelm. And certainly I'm not suggesting that we should just run towards danger. That's the daredevil trying to prove himself. But love will always require strength and courage. It will require us to have resources that are beyond ourselves. And therefore, if you want to know if you're walking in courage, are you being motivated by love? You see, nothing requires more courage than love. And I'm not talking in love about sappy emotionalism, but I'm talking about the gritty love of the cross. And so in your day-to-day, are you motivated by the best for those around you? Are you thinking about how to serve and bless the people in your life? Are you praying for them? Are you motivated by a love for God that, in the words of Jim Elliot, recognizes he is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep to gain that which he cannot lose? You see, if courage is the vehicle through which all virtues are expressed, then love is the sum and destination to which all virtues point. Again, this is why Jesus says, loving God with all you are and your neighbor as yourself, that's the sum of every one of his commandments. So, to be strong and courageous is to take active steps of faith in the living God in the cause of love. It's not taking risks to better yourself or to prove yourself, and it's something that every one of us is called to, and every one of us has the capacity to be able to be. And so, be strong and courageous, the Lord says. This requires the second element of courage from this passage, and that's obedience to the negative command. Do not fear or be in dread of them. And this command raises two questions for us. Number one, who are they? Who are the people that they are not to fear? Who is it that we are not to fear? And secondly, what does it mean to be in fear or dread of them? In the context of this passage, who are the people the Israelites were not to fear? Deuteronomy chapter 31 in many ways mirrors the beginning of Deuteronomy, particularly in chapter 1, verses 26 through 40, where you've got very, very similar commands. And in chapter 1, what's happening is Moses is reminding the people why they have to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. If you remember the story, the Israelites just miraculously escaped from Egypt. God liberated them out of slavery by causing these 10 miraculous plagues to cause the Egyptians to let the Israelites go. And it culminates in them miraculously walking right through the heart of the Red Sea. And fast forward now, God's calling them to trust him again by taking the land that he's promised to them. And so the people, they send spies into the promised land. And the spies come back and they report, look guys, this land is amazing. It's flowing with milk and honey. But in order for us to take this promised land, we're going to have to go to war with some terrifying people. There are giants there. And so the people back in Numbers 14, where that story takes place, they start complaining. They say, look, the Lord just brought us out of Egypt to kill us. We can't fight giants. And because of this, because of their fear, which they were controlled by, they did not obey the Lord, though he gave the very same command he's giving here, with the same promise. And though the people just watched, they just saw him deliver them, miraculously, way beyond anything that their power and own means could accomplish. But they choose to be controlled by fear instead of taking steps of obedient faith. They turn on their leaders. And so the result is they've got to wander 40 years in the wilderness. That generation's not going to get to enter the promised land. This is what fear always does. It always destroys our life. It keeps us from the best that God has for us. And look, here's the point of this. Those giants that the people had to face, they were real giants. There were real battles to be fought with real warriors from real vicious cultures. The Israelites, in and of themselves, they were outmanned and outgunned. And so courage is not just reframing the situation so we don't feel fear. The context of this passage, there's real danger. You've got to be strong and courageous in a really dangerous and scary situation. And so courage is not just doing mental gymnastics. It's not just thinking about statistics. You know, there's a place for that, right? You know, are you afraid of flying? Well, if you think about it, you should be more... Do you drive? Because statistically, you should be more afraid of driving than of flying. Or are you afraid of sharks? Statistically, you should be more afraid of vending machines than you are of sharks. You're more likely to die from a vending machine than a shark. But thinking that way, that's not courage. Courage is not just reframing things mentally so you're not feeling fear. To say, oh, you know, that's not just really dangerous. Real courage leads you into real danger. To live a life of courage and strength means that you will be led into places where you really feel fear, where you really feel weakness. And so to obey this command to not fear or not be in dread, it doesn't mean that your limbic system will never be triggered. It doesn't mean that there will never be times where your heart's pumping, where your mind is racing, where your pupils are dilating, where you're driving down 89 and you're about to get off the exit and you get a text message that says, did you get the bulletins? 15 minutes before this church service is about to start. To fear does not mean that you'll never feel those things, but that you will not be controlled by the dangers and the threats. It is to move forward with active faith in the living God for the cause of love, despite how you feel in the face of danger. And so how can you know if you're living a life that's controlled by fear? How can you, you know, you want to look at your life and say, are there places where I am living in fear and dread? Don't look at your feelings. Don't look at how afraid you feel, but look at your actions. And so what does fear look like in action? Let me suggest two primary ways that fear expresses itself. On the one hand, you have avoidance. You have running. You have escaping. You have under-engaging. You have deserting your position. That's one way that we often think about fear. But on the other hand, there's also attacking, blowing up, over-engaging. Instead of deserting your position, you usurp in order to take control, to take the reins out of your fear and anxiety. You know, early on in my marriage, I thought that when you were in conflict, when emotions were high, there's two options. Either you withdraw or you attack. And I'm wired instinctively. I'm somebody who, when the pressure's on, I want to withdraw. Hey, let's pull away from this. Let's take stock of things. Let's think about this. Everybody stop. Just slow down. Let's take stock of things. My wife is wired in the exact opposite way. When the pressure's on, let's press in. Let's figure out what we need to do. Let's Let's figure this out. And so you can imagine that early on in marriage, sparks were flying. And I always thought, you know, that I was the hero. Because, look, I'm not attacking. I'm withdrawing. I'm not doing the destructive thing here. But what I never realized is that both of those things, whether I'm attacking or I'm avoiding, both of those things are being driven by fear. Neither of them is strength and courage. And so this verse that we're looking at, Deuteronomy 31:6, it helped show me that there's another way. And I should probably say this, that, you know, sometimes the first step of courage is to withdraw. If you feel like you're getting out of control, sometimes the first step, you do need to pull back, calm down so you can re-engage. But here's the point. Real courage and strength, it can never stop there. It always moves on to engaging the person that you're in conflict with, whether it's your spouse or your kids or your coworker. It moves forward into engaging them. And it's not just engaging them, but it's engaging them. You know, it's not just switching from avoidance to attack, but it's engaging them with the wisdom that is from above, that's open to reason, that's full of mercy and sincerity, that can hear and see where a person's coming from and is able to do so with compassion and love, while at the very same time still able to hold on to God's impartial law. My friends, real courage is impossible. If you don't know that, you've probably never tasted it. To have real courage, to enter the mess of relationships, to keep going in the mess of relationships, to enter into the messes of this world, the darkness of things like modern slavery, the darkness of radical poverty, the darkness of mental illness, the darkness of our political system, to enter into these things in a way that God calls us to, not just reinforcing echo chambers, but also not just avoiding conflict. All of these things require the presence of God, the God who calls us to be full of grace. It requires us to walk with the one, the only one who ever lived, who was always full of grace and truth. You know, I really believe that our primary reason for not being as spiritually vital and alive as a church, that the primary thing is that we're way too controlled. We're way too controlled by our fear. You know, I mean, we have the most amazing, life-changing news that the world has ever heard of. We have living water in a world that is dying from dehydration. And so why on earth aren't we seeing God move more in the relationships around us? Why aren't we seeing more people to come to know Him and grow in Him? And I think it's fear, that the primary thing is fear. This is why God has to command us to not fear so often. You see, courage is not just talking to someone about Jesus. There's a way in which you can do that in a fearful way, in a cold, self-protective, disinterested, us versus them way that makes people come away with a sense of, man, Jesus must be lucky to have you on His team. That's not courage. Real courage talks about Jesus with love, with compassion, with humility, in a way that takes genuine interest in the person that you're talking to. It gets that the only reason that I've got any connection to this God is because of His unbelievable grace. You know, here's another example. You know, a lot of people today think that what courage is about taking sides and then attacking whoever is not on your side. A lot of people are concerned that political agendas have crept into the church. But people always come into the church with political agendas. You know, in Jesus' first disciples, He had a tax collector and a zealot. I mean, you think that we've got a divisive political situation, you've no idea what that would have been like. Within His same body, He has a tax collector and a zealot. And so I think that a bigger concern is not that political agendas are creeping into the church, but that political attitudes are creeping into the church. It seems to me that the most damage is not being done by people moving toward the far ends of those spectrums. The thing that's blowing up churches right now is coming from politically driven fear responses that attack people or withdraw from people who have different instincts than themselves and smear them with labels as being on the far end of the spectrum. Oh, you care about racial justice. Well, you must be a critical race theory communist. Or you care about religious liberty and the rights of the unborn. You must be a Christian nationalist who's just a puppet for the conservative party. This feeling of compulsion to attack people or to withdraw from people is probably not coming from being strong and courageous. It's probably coming from being controlled by fear. Fear creates animosity and isolation. And so you look at your life. What's the fruit of your actions? Fear drives us apart. And one of the primary ways that you see this today is that fear is driving us into the online world, away from real relationships. The average American today spends 2.5 hours on social media. The average high school senior in 2015 spent 4 hours online. And all of that just exacerbates our fears. It keeps us from being strong and courageous. Sherry Turkle, who's a psychologist at MIT, who's been studying the effects of living online, says this, that in the metaverse, and this is in your time of reflection, in the metaverse, you know, this online world, you just walk away. You just go into avoidance. You don't need strength and courage. You don't learn to negotiate. You don't learn to have the complex life and the complex love that are things we really need to live a better life. Now more than ever before. And what happens in this virtual community is that people tend and trend to go places where there's no friction. Where you're with people where you don't have to have the... Where you're with people where you don't need to have the quality of the real. And that's very, very troubling because that's exactly what we don't need. You see, when we live online, it increases fear's grasp on us. It decreases our ability to have strength and courage. And so one of the implications of do not fear being dread of them, don't live online. You know, the literal Hebrew for this, this idea of don't be in dread of them is don't tremble before their faces. In other words, don't let the perceptions of others, whether online or in real life, don't let the perceptions of others control you, control your actions. You can walk in love even when you're being attacked. In fact, over and over again, this is exactly what Jesus describes life in the new covenant, life of walking with him to look like. The Apostle Paul says in 2 Timothy 2:24, this is what it means to be the Lord's servant. The Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome. He must not be a divisive, argumentative person, but he must be kind to everyone, whoever they are, wherever they are, whatever kind of things that they believe. He must be able to teach. You know, he must be able to persuade people who think differently than him. And then here's the hardest part of all. He must patiently endure evil, correcting his opponents with gentleness. That's what it means to be a servant of the living God. It's not fighting for our rights, but it's patiently enduring evil while entering into hard situations, while correcting people with gentleness, always being kind, always being motivated ultimately by the cause of love. You know, that's courage in action. So maybe it looks like this. You go after your kid who just yelled at you, and they yell at you, they slam their door, and everything in you wants to give them what for disrespecting you. But instead, you pursue them. You say, hey, what's going on? Where's this coming from? Help me. I want to know your heart. You're pursuing people. So this is what it means to be strong, courageous, not fear and be in dread of them. But where does this power come from? We've seen courage is what we're called to, that it's something that must be driven by love, not self-promotion, not trying to prove yourself. And we've seen that to be strong and courageous means that we can't be controlled by fear. which expresses itself either in avoidance or in attacking, anxiously trying to take control. But how do we actually do it? What actually gives us the power to be strong and courageous? Gloriously, this verse not only gives us commands, but it gives us a promise. It not only tells us what we have to do, but how, the power to be able to do it. And this is our third and final point this morning. The power for both these commands. For it is the Lord your God who goes with you wherever you go. He will not leave you or forsake you. And when it says that he will not leave you or forsake you, that forsake you in Hebrew, it actually comes before he will not leave you. It could be translated, he's not going to drop you. God's not going to withdraw from you. He's not just going to pull away when the going gets tough. He will go with you wherever you go. And because of this, because God will never withdraw from you, there's never a time when you need to be withdrawn from a constant trust and dependence upon him. And this is where courage comes from. That knowing God is with you wherever you go. He won't withdraw from you even as you're walking into the valley of the shadow of death. Now we need to say here that this is meant to encourage, again, it's meant to encourage courage in active trust, in walking down the path. Right? The context of this command is that God is saying, obey fully all my commandments. And that's why he says, be strong and courageous. It's to keep going. And so the promise that gives you power for courage and strength is power as you move forward in active trust. I will go with you as you go into the nations and make disciples of all nations, proclaiming the gospel. This is what Jesus says, right? When he says, I'll be with you always, even to the end of the age, in the Great Commission. Right now I'm reading with my son the kids' version of The Pilgrim's Progress. And there's this scene where a Christian is fighting with the devil. And he has this fear. He's got fear. He's feeling fear. He wants to run away. But he remembers that he's got armor on. And part of his armor is a breastplate. And he recognizes that armor only covers him, his shield. It only covers him if he's faced forward, if he's faced toward the danger. It won't protect him, it won't help him if he's running away in the opposite direction. So this promise is as we move forward in active trust, I'll be with you wherever you go. And that's wonderful. That's glorious. That's amazing. I will be with you wherever you go. I will not drop you. I will not let you go. How can we know that? How can we be sure of that? When we're in situations where it seems like darkness is all around us, you know, maybe you say, well, I've been running the other way for a long time. Or maybe you're saying, look, I think I've been walking in active trust, but I don't feel like God is with me. How can you know he will never leave you or forsake you? My friends, where in real space-time history do we see courage most vividly portrayed? Jesus's life was a life, a walk of perfect trust in the living God. His every move was a step of active faith, even though he knew that every one of those steps was a step closer to his cross, closer to his death, closer to his ultimate shame and humiliation. Why did he do it? He did it because he loved God with every fiber of his being, and because he loved us enough to give up his life so that we can have it. Every one of us has been controlled by fear. Every one of us has played the coward. Every one of us has been enslaved to the dark kingdom of fear. We have all attacked or avoided. We've all protected ourselves. We've all covered over our fear with our performance or running from our fears to other things. But on the cross, Jesus was immersed in the lake of fire that our cowardice earned for us. On the cross, Jesus gave us grounds for courage that nothing else can give. You know, if you're here this morning and you wonder, is there really, you know, is there even a divine power? Is there anything is there actually anything or anyone that really runs this universe? Or is it all just really up to blind chance? Is there nothing but the material? Well, if that's how you think, then you have every right to be consumed with fear, to be consumed with weakness. You know, you could drop dead at any second. Without God, what's to stop a new virus to stop a new virus cropping up that could kill all of us? What's to stop an adversarial nation from dropping an atomic bomb that would just wipe us all out? You know, I mean, we're wrestling with this, right, as a culture, with the horrific, tragic deaths of students in these recent shootings. Without God, what hope do we have? What courage do we have? But it's not just secularism. It's not just materialism that can't give us grounds for strength, deep strength and courage. No other religion can give you the kind of unshakable courage that we have in the gospel. In every other religion, there's question marks. You know, for a Muslim, there's no certainty that you belong to Allah until you die. Religion teaches you need to be good enough, but it never offers you a standard which can make you feel that you actually are, that you can actually feel confident that you actually are good enough. And so in your fear, you're always going to be driven by trying to prove yourself. You're not going to be set free to walk in love. But on the cross, the Bible tells us Jesus was offered as a once-for-all sacrifice. On the cross, God is establishing a new covenant. We're going to see this in a moment as we take part in communion. God is establishing a new covenant that doesn't depend on us. It's sealed with the blood, not of a lamb or of a goat, but with the blood of God's very own Son. On the cross, there is a promise. There is a once-for-all payment. Look at what I paid to bring you to myself. I gave up my only Son. And I can say this now, in having an only Son. If God gave up His only Son to secure you to Himself, nothing can ever take you away from Him. Not death, not hell, not Satan, not even you. We can be strong and courageous because on the cross, all of our greatest enemies have been defeated. We no longer have to live in dread or fear of them. Look at the cross. Would a God who paid that, would God who gave up His only Son, ever let you go? No. I will not leave you or forsake you. I will go with you wherever you go. And so, as we close, I'd like us to pray together. I'd like us to pray that God would show us places in our lives where we're being controlled by fear, where either we're taking the reins in an anxious way, or we're running away in an avoidant way. And then I'd like us to ask God to show us what does it look like in these situations to trust you, to take concrete steps of faith that trusts in you, the living God, in the cause of love. And then after this, today, I want us to be looking for this in our lives, looking for places when you sense fear, where you sense that your tendency is to pull back or take control in a way that's anxious, and engage God in those moments and say, Lord, where is this coming from? What does it look like for me to trust you? What does it look like for me to be strong and courageous in this situation? Before we go to prayer, let me close with this. These are words from a hymn that Elizabeth Elliot said that her husband sang with his friends right before they were killed by the people that they came to bring the gospel to. And these are the words. We go in faith, our own great weakness feeling, and need more each day thy grace to know. Yet from our hearts a song of triumph pealing, we rest on thee, and in thy name we go. Would you pray with me? Father in heaven, we thank you that you have given us grounds to be strong and courageous. Lord, that you call us to press into life with strength and courage, but you don't call us to do that on our own. You have given us a promise. You have given us security through the cross. No matter what happens, you will never leave us or forsake us. And so, Lord, would you reveal to us the places in our lives where we're not trusting you in that way, where we think that it really is, at the end of the day, up to us, where we don't recognize that you're the one who's going before us to fight the battles that you're calling us to fight. And then, Lord, would you help us? Would you bring your gospel to bear in those situations? Would you help us to re-engage in those places with your strength, with your courage, by the power of your very Holy Spirit, your presence that goes with us wherever we go? And we ask all of these things in the name of your Son, in his authority, for he is the one who has secured all these things for us. Amen.